Hello.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Did You Know? I am your host, John C. Abercrombie. Today we have an interesting discussion. It's kind of a continuation of a series that is taking place, and it involves the renaming of many of our military installations. A little background on this story. As we speak, we talk about Black history, and today is June 18th, tomorrow is 19th, which is officially Juneteenth. As we speak about Juneteenth, many people don't have a full understanding of what it is. Many are aware that it is of particular significance to the Black population, although it's becoming a little bit better known and a little bit more out there, if you will. Many people are observing it as a holiday. How did we get ourselves into this position? One, when we begin to speak, now let me make a statement here. The program is not only for people of color, not only for Black people. It is for all people, because Black history is a part of American history. It is segmented out because in so many instances, those contributions and those things that have affected Black life have been left out, have been omitted from Black history. As a result, many people, including myself, have grown up not being aware of our history. To people not directly affected, we are one country. We talk about how we are a nation under God, in which all men and women, we've added that, are created equal. And what that should mean is that we have an equal opportunity to succeed or fail as we are driven, to succeed or fail as we are driven. As we look back at this history, it's not a gimme situation, because for years there has been struggle, mighty struggle on the parts of people. People that have dedicated their lives, people that have even given their lives, people that have had their lives taken. But unless we understand that, we cannot bridge the divide that exists in this country. Many people may take some offense to the fact that there is a divide in this country. As we look back many, many years, we see examples of this. I'm not sure the decade that it was written, but there was a fantastically popular book at one time called Black Like Me, in which a white man went underground. I think he took certain chemicals to darken his skin, and he lived as a Black person for a period of time. This was very interesting to many people. But we do experiments like that, and they are good, but they are very limited, because you cannot grow up your entire life and experience what has happened, what happens to children at an extremely young age, what happens during the years in school, what happens in the years afterwards as you start to seek employment to take care of your family, your loved ones. Sometimes you have to take care of your parents. We often don't realize this, but in many cases, slaves were virtually worked to death. They were worked under conditions that saw them get up at sunrise and work until sunset. It's called kink to kink. You get up when you can't see in the morning and don't go to bed until you can't see at night. And what was happening? People were getting rich. Or let me clarify that. A limited number of people will be becoming extremely rich on this prospect. It is estimated, and I want to clarify something here. Many people are carrying around, many white people are carrying around a burden that they don't need to carry in regards to the discussion that we're having here. Why? Because history has portrayed it where the slave owners, blacks, were the slaves. And that's not totally true, because there were many white people that did not own a single slave. When we look at the South, we think that it is a homogenous area of the country, that all people in the South own slaves, and that is not true. As we look statistically at it, less than 6% of all white people ever owned a slave. And of those, it was only 2% of the white people that were becoming wealthy, filthy rich off of slaves, owning enough and having obtained enough land that was taken from the indigenous people to become absolutely wealthy. These 2% people controlled more than 50% of the gross national product of this country. As a result, there were many people that risked their very lives to combat slavery, even in the South. Many of us are afraid, and I'm using us and everybody in this country, are afraid to look up our history, look up our genealogy, because we are afraid that we are going to find that an ancestor was a slave owner. We are afraid of that. The concept that we have is that all the slave owners were bad, all the white people were slave owners, and therefore are bad, and that's not necessarily true. Some even died in the process, were subjected to severe financial penalties because the very fact of helping an escaped person an enslaved person escape could result in, if you were a farmer, and most people were in the South, nobody buying your product, nobody giving you credit to buy seed or other equipment that was needed in order to run your operation. Imagine that. But some of you are related to people that had the courage to do that. What we're speaking of today, and I'm just laying the background of the conversation that we're getting into, is that many of you have relatives that, if you have a particular position on slavery, would be very proud of your ancestors for doing. While many of the people that operated the Underground Railroad were black, there were white people that assisted at great penalty to themselves for doing so. There were other things that they did. An act of kindness could make a person's day, could make a person's life. And yet and still, we have labored under the impression, and falsely so, that all white people are in this minority of people. I don't care if your ancestors were slave-holding people. And let me give you an example of that. When we look back at Supreme Court cases, one of the worst, and it is still argued today if this is the worst Supreme Court decision ever, and that is Plessy v. Ferguson, Ferguson being the judge that ruled in this particular case, Plessy being a black man who had one great-grandparent that was black and therefore under the laws was black, but had no mark of it on him, on his physical body whatsoever, not in his hair, not in his eyes, not in his skin color. The case was set up by the NAACP and other organizations against the advice of Frederick Douglass because it could go so wrong. What was taking place in New Orleans was a streetcar conductor had to determine the race of everybody getting on board. Plessy did this, sat in the white car. A detective was hired to ask Plessy if he were black, and he said yes, and arrest him to get this court, to get this case to court. The court then ruled that no black man had any right that a white person was expected to honor. And that set off part, it was not all of it, but part of the separate versus equal doctrine. Separate versus equal was always separate, but not nearly equal. So we've had people that have had to claw their way out of a hole in order to get to the level that most people find at their bottom. And it's difficult. But I find that those stories are encouraging because it shows the human spirit. It shows what we can do as human beings. And it's difficult. And some people, like most, if we look at it statistically, most people that face the oppression that these people did give up. We're seeing suicide rates because people don't know how to handle the pressure. Not so much in those days, but it affected them and generations after them. But we're looking at steps that are being taken, overlook, or not to overlook, but to change a very blatant practice in this country. We went to civil war, and I'm not sure that it fits the definition of a civil war in total, and let me explain that. A civil war, to my understanding, is a war within a country. The Civil War was not such a war. It was a war between two countries. Remember, all of the states that separated, and there were 11, a separate country. When we separated from England, and there were loyalists to England when we did this separation, and when we did, we formed a constitution. We elected a president, a vice president, and a succession of other orders, of other office holders. When William Henry Gist and South Carolina seceded, William Henry Gist was the governor. When South Carolina seceded from the Union and were joined by 10 other states, they did that. They formed their own separate country, the Confederate States of America. And they existed as a separate country. They had a capital. The capital moved a couple of times, but our capital has also moved a couple of times. History sometimes doesn't keep us reminded of what has taken place in our past. The purpose of this broadcast is to do that, to bring forth our history. And I do this in a very reverent way, because we have always preached that we must know our history in order to avoid repeating it. Do you agree with that statement? I think most of you do. But what I found in my research is that that's not really the case, because we've had black people fighting for the American interest forever. There was a person, the first person to die in the American Revolutionary War was Crispus Attucks, described as a mulatto. Now, there's discussion taking place as to whether mulatto was properly applied to him, because in some instances we see where it applies to blacks mixed with any other race. And there is a question as to whether Crispus was Native American. But if he was, where did the name come from? It is very similar to that. I saw a production with Stephen Seals the other day, who works in Wilmington, and a historian and a brilliant actor. Brilliant, I tell you. A brilliant actor. And he portrayed the role of James Armistead Lafayette. His name originally was James Armistead. He adopted the name Lafayette because he admired the Marquis de Lafayette from France so greatly. And what did he do? He put his life on the line for America during the American Revolution. He was a slave. He was enslaved. And he was given an assignment by the Marquis, who was great friends with George Washington, the founder or first president of the United States, first president as we know our presidents to be today, and helped America win its independence. Helped America win its independence. The role played by James Armistead should be splattered in every history book that we have because it was so important, so monumental. What he was asked to do as a black man was to spy on Cornwallis and the UK. And he was able to do this because the town that they were in was about 2,000 people, over half of whom were black. He could cross the lines, and he did so and ingratiated himself with General Cornwallis, and who was a very prominent figure for the Brits, very prominent for the Brits, and being educated. Now, we talk about slaves being uneducated. There's a reason for that. We won't go into that today. But what we find is that he was educated. The owner brought in a tutor for his children, and Armistead was educated along with the master's children. He knew how to read, he knew how to write, and he knew his numbers, and he knew them very well. He was a man of great intellect. We often are portrayed as people with minimal intellect. But that story, and one that we'll have to dig into and relate later, started with Gomez de Azura in the 1500s. We won't go into that today because we are talking about military installations being renamed and renamed after they have been named for enemies of the United States. Many of the bases that are being named are being named after people who resigned military commissions in the United States of America to join this other country, the Confederated States of America, and take up arms against America. They took up arms against America. Go to AmazingBlackHistory.com. This week, we're talking about Lieutenant General Arthur Gregg. And Gregg is half of the team that's being used to rename Fort Lee. Fort Lee is named after Robert E. Lee. Well known in the South, with statues of him all over the place. Most of those statues were not erected immediately after the Civil War. Many of them came following Supreme Court decisions that gave advances to blacks. Many of these statues were as recent as the 1950s when Brown v. Board reversed the separate but equal doctrine. Oh, yeah. It's a middle finger salute to America. And they take taxpayers' money, money from black people, to maintain these properties, to maintain them. They are a part of history. But do I have to look up the rear end of this horse every time I go somewhere? I find it offensive because those people were willing to fight and die to make sure that my ancestors never took a free breath of air in their entire life, that they spent their time making a small percentage of people filthy rich. These people played games with other white people, but they held out a slim possibility that they were at least better than the blacks. And this has contributed to the Great Divide. Some of you listening to the sound of my voice are hearing information like this for the first time. This is why I do the program live. I do it live so that you can listen. I do it live because I have a dashboard on my computer that allows me to see people that called in. Now, if you're listening on your phone and using an internet link, it's great. I love you because you're getting information that is what I want you to get, and I want you to continue to follow us. I want you to invite other people to join us. But I cannot interact with you because I don't see you on my dashboard. In order to see you on my dashboard and interact with you, it's necessary to call in. The number to call in is area code 646-668-8217. When you do that, you can listen to the program. When you initially come on, the mics will be off, except for mine. I can open them. And those of you that use a cell phone, you'll see a icon that looks like a microphone with a slash through it. It may not be lit up, but if you touch that, it will mute your phone. That's just to avoid distracting others as we go, because we can hear noise of dishwashers running, trains running by, streets, kids, dogs, what have you. It's just a courtesy. And we can have an adult conversation. We need to have an adult conversation. Everybody is not going to agree with it, but there is a mature way of voicing that disagreement. I like to hear that, and sometimes why. And if you call in, you can still hear the program. It just allows us that interchange. I encourage it. I usually talk about the topic prior to opening the microphones, which is in the latter part of the show. So if you're on with a internet connection, you can keep that. Call in later. I will let you know when we get towards that point. Also, that number can be used for any programs on Crown Talking Drums, and you can interact with the host on them. There is a Facebook page called Crown Talking Drums that usually shows the schedule. I, however, am dedicated to being on every Sunday at 4 p.m. That's 1 p.m. Pacific time, because we are heard around the world. Through the marvels of the internet, we do this. We have not done extensive publications and done that. Most of it has come from word of mouth, but we're reaching thousands of people doing that. There is also an archive that you can look up. So if you missed a previous broadcast, you can go back. I don't know how long that library contains things before they drop off, but go back. Listen. If you heard something on this podcast, that you would like to review or you want to share it with someone else, please do so. Because we need to know this information. Let me jump ahead or jump to current so that you can understand what we're talking about. Fort Lee is named after Robert E. Lee. These are Confederate generals, and like I said, they had to resign, many of them had to resign commissions in the United States military, take off the uniform, put down the weapons of America, accept a commission from another country, put on another uniform, pick up weapons of another country, and fight their former country. Is that the person that you believe America should be honoring? Not only that, but most of them were not particularly great generals. Fort Hood, John Bell Hood, third largest military installation in the country, located near Killeen, Texas, lost probably more troops than anybody else. He was wounded. He couldn't use his left arm. His right leg was amputated. This is his dedication that he had, and I'm not taking anything from him because of that. But it was recently renamed Fort Cavazos, named after a four-star Hispanic general, much beloved by his troops. And he was beloved by his troops because he was meritorious. I think he had Medal of Honor in two different conflicts. And he may end up in the foxhole with you because he had a connection with his troops. He was dedicated to what he was dedicated to. And he was a leader and led knowing exactly what these people were facing. He knew because he had been in conflict. He was ordered off the battlefield, but would not leave the bodies of his fellow soldiers behind. And at great risk to himself, he got them off the battlefield. We leave no soldier behind. Today, as I am speaking, we're still trying to identify remains and bring those people back home where they belong. These are wars from past, where we go back to World War I, world conflicts in Vietnam, conflicts in other places, where our soldiers have been for years. It means that much to us. He was not going to leave a fellow soldier behind as long as there was breath in him. So Fort Hood is now Fort Cavazos. We're looking at another facility that is being renamed. And when we look, it's almost like we're looking for victory overseas. And we are. But what you must realize in order to put everything in perspective is that many of these soldiers were fighting for two things. They were fighting for America and America's goals and dreams and ideals, that they were being denied American soil, being denied on American soil. For example, when we look at General Gregg, he received rank when he was at Fort Lee. High rank, but could not use the officer's club. Why? Because of the color of his skin. We have people like Harriet Tubman, who led troops in South Carolina and freed, not in taking them across into Canada or other areas of freedom, but right here in South Carolina. She freed over 750 people herself. Yet she had her arm broken and ribs broken because as she was being paid by the military to go to a different installation, the conductor, because she was black, she was about 5 foot tall, but she was strong as an ox, and he couldn't move her. And so they ended up with about four or five people physically taking her, breaking her arm, breaking ribs, because of the color of her skin. We don't often talk about that. We talk about slaves escaping and going into Canada. We also must realize that Mexico did not believe in slavery. And many in the South, and we're finding the trails that they used to go into Mexico. There were all black towns in Mexico. There have been all black towns in America. But America has found some reason to break them up. When General Gregg was finally general, fairly recent in days gone by, he was able to use the Officers Club. I remember talking to people such as Matthew Perry, who was a federal judge in South Carolina, and others, about the fact that there were food canteen facilities. They had to order their whatever they wanted through a hole in the wall. And yet prisoners of war were given the accommodations of being in the officers' club itself. And we had to grovel for what we wanted. This is the way that America has treated us. And it's been a slap in the face, a slap in the face to come to this country. One of the bases that is going to be renamed is Fort Polk. It's going to be named for a soldier who was stationed at Camp Wadsworth in Spartanburg, South Carolina, my hometown. And I am absolutely ashamed of Spartanburg. The reason? They wanted the troops here because there was money involved. But to my understanding, and I may have the name wrong, but I understand that Mayor Floyd wrote a letter to the War Department saying, we're not going to pick up a finger to help these soldiers, referring to the black soldiers. We're not going to do it. But the 369th, known as the Harlem Hellfighters, they didn't name themselves the Harlem Hellfighters. They wanted to be known as the Rattlers, like the rattlesnake. Don't step on me. But let me tell you, one of those soldiers by the name of Henry Johnson and Needham Roberts were on sentry duty. They were attacked by German soldiers. They fought them off in hand-to-hand combat. And when the area was reconnoitered the next day, they figured the party was in excess of 20, up to 30 German soldiers that they fought off hand-to-hand. And it got down to the point where Johnson was using his rifle as a club until it broke. They served longer than any other unit in World War I. They served 191 days of fighting. They never lost an inch of ground, something that anybody would be proud of. Spartanburg finally put up a plaque, but I bet dollars to donuts that there are people in Spartanburg that have passed that plaque hundreds of times and never seen it, never seen it. When we talk about that, I'll tell you where it is, but we ought to be ashamed of it. That's all we've got. And this man is having a military base named after him. Now, when we talk about General Gregg, that new base is Gregg-Adams. We're going to talk about Adams next week, Charity Adams, a lieutenant colonel. And what she did was she had the six triple eights. Most people don't know of the six triple eights, but it was over 800 military women in uniform who served in England and France. I'm not going to give too much of that story away, but it was 75 years before America even recognized them. You know, people are willing to die for this country. And when troops were coming back from overseas, what did they face? The first thing they faced is they deboarded ships. Was a sign saying, white soldiers this way, colored that way. As they were being mustered out, black soldiers were limited to 29% disability, loss of an arm, a leg, an eye, emotional scars, physical scars, 29%. Why such an odd number? Because at 30%, you got a pension. We can use people to win a war, but we can't give them respect as human beings. In my opinion, a human being is a heart, a mind, and a soul. And they have given their all, hopefully so that them, their families, and future generations can get the respect that they deserve. Finally seeing some of it. Greg wanted to be in medicine. He wanted to be a lab tech. He was qualified to be a lab tech. But when he got into the military and was stationed in Germany, they didn't allow black people to do this, although nobody saw them. It was the quality of their work. It was their qualifications. But yet and still, no, you can't have that. You need to drive a truck, dig a ditch, do something else. In the future, we're going to talk about Doris Miller. Doris Miller. We may know him, but that name has been misspelled. And we know him as Dory Miller, served in the Navy. But the Navy would only allow blacks to work in the mess hall, the kitchen, cook, serve white officers. That's all. Dory Miller showed the courage in shooting down Japanese plane, although he had not been taught. America wins when we all win. When we all win, when we can share in the glory, when we can share in the victory. But we expect these people to go and their lives on the line and honor them and honor people that fought to make sure they didn't even get in the military. It's been a chore. When we went into the Civil War, neither side wanted black soldiers, scared. But we proved ourselves and made the difference. This is why America won, because of those troops. Look at amazing black history. Look at James Armistead Lafayette. I wrote that several years ago after seeing the production with Stephen Seals. And talking with him, I need to go back and redo it. Because while I thought I had captured that essence, I did not. And this is what's happening, folks. Most of you have never heard that name. And let me tell you how dedicated or how difficult it is to seek your freedom. When I tell you these words, and I've told you before, no refuge can save the hireling or slave. The hireling were those people that fought for the British. Yes, they fought for the British because the British said, if you fight with us, we will free you. They were doing everything they could to seek freedom. But the story we tell is that these people were so happy working for no wages, horrible living conditions, conditions under which a husband may be sold away from her husband. The children may be sent to far distant places, never seen again. That they were so happy doing this, that they were just singing and dancing for the master. No, if word got out that you said anything bad about the master, you could be beaten. Chattel slavery means that you were no more significant under the law than a chair or a table. If the master decided to take an axe and chop your foot off, that was it. It's his property or her property. They can do what they want to with their property. You're not a human being. You're a thing. And yet and still, those people that fought to keep us in that position, under those conditions, were protected. They're being honored. So the name of Fort Lee, I think it's now official, is Fort Gregg, Gregg hyphen Adams. It's a small thing, but in the scheme of things, it's small. But I think it's very significant. Henry Johnson is going to do that. Not all bases are being named after blacks. Fort Benning, Georgia, is named after two people. It's now going to be called Fort Moore, two white people. But I am thrilled that it's being renamed. Moore, the military man, brilliant, brilliant. His wife was non-military. And I want you to understand the story. And we'll go into it in depth. But America used to have a very impersonal way of letting people know that their son or their husband or their father had been killed. They would send them a stupid telegram. Moore, the female half of this couple, not under my watch, you won't. Somebody will go there face to face with those people, hug them, console them after what they have given to this country. A telegram is wholly insufficient. Insufficient. We are digging down and we're digging deep. This should reveal history as it is, not as somebody perceives it to be. This is one of the reasons that we do this program, so that we can look at it. It's not all about what black people have done, as if they're better than anybody else. They're not. But they deserve an equal chance to succeed or fail. To succeed or fail. I had, when I finished college with a degree in chemistry, run into a brick wall, thanks to Woodrow Wilson. What does Woodrow Wilson have to do with this? Understand at one time that the government hired people to do a job. We had people such as in the printing office, such as in the treasury, such as in other departments of the government, who had achieved promotion based on their abilities. Some of these people, surprisingly, were black. Woodrow Wilson said, can't have that. Fired them, instituted a policy, and constructed partitions in these rooms to separate black people from white people. Spent money putting in extra restrooms so that we had black, white men, colored men, white women, colored women, And when we see the historic movie, Hidden Figures, we sometimes don't understand what's going on. But we saw these women who were essential in our space program, essential, because when the first person to go into space, John Glenn, was going, he said, "I'm not trusting that computer. Computers were new. Have the girls," and he wasn't doing this in a disrespectful manner, but that's what they called women at the time, "have the girls check the numbers. And if they agree, I'll go. If they don't, I'm not." And in part of that movie, the women, these are adult women having to ask to go to the bathroom because it's in a different building. We have subjected American citizens to such indignities. How did that affect me? I come later. But I come during a period of time when Wilson had made it known that all applications for jobs, all jobs, had to have a picture attached. What did that do? That saved time because you could throw mine in the round file without looking at it, not given an opportunity to show what a person is able to do. When we entered the war, we had people that were begging for workers. And we had people applying who were turned down because they were black. We're talking about skilled jobs. We're talking about semi-skilled jobs. We're talking about non-skilled jobs. Companies would not hire. We're making some progress, but it's slow. And I want you to realize that this small step is very significant. When my son and daughter-in-law were setting up their first home, it was at Fort Hood. I didn't realize that they were honoring a Confederate general who fought to make sure that they never got that opportunity. They were both West Point grads, intending to make the military their career. I mean, I consider it shameful that this is what you subject people to that are willing to make that sacrifice for you, for me, for our descendants that are coming along. It is shameful to think about it. It's hard to think about it. But we are finally making a change. A committee was put together. That committee was headed by Michelle Howard, 4-star admiral in the United States Navy, a black woman. When we see Captain Phillips, the movie Captain Phillips, it's a real life story. Captain Phillips was rescued because Michelle Howard put together a team, an interdisciplinary action team, not all Navy people, because we need a broad view of what we're looking at in order to achieve maximum success, in order to achieve maximum success. And one of the things that was brought up, not by a Navy person, was that an unexpected wake could put a rescue in motion. The captain of that ship, or the admiral of that ship, the commanding officer of that ship, was Michelle Howard, a black woman. And what happened is they had that ship travel, and they knew where they were traveling that would make a wake that would catch them off guard. This is what we're capable of doing. When we look at, I believe it's Valerie Armour, first combat Marine helicopter pilot, black female helicopter pilot. And we talk about what she was doing. She is a motivational and inspirational speaker as we are now. Look her up sometimes. Look at some of her videos. Look at the posts that I have on her. And you'll see someone that can inspire anybody, regardless of their race, regardless of their gender, regardless of their religion, regardless of any of that. If they're human, she can inspire them. But she was talking about how she was standing in a line and happened to find that the person either in front of or behind her was a military person. And that person talked about being pinned down under fire. And nobody had been able to get to them. But they were rescued by, or what saved them was a helicopter. Guess who was the pilot of that? Yes, that black female. She had aspirations and she fought for them. She wanted to become a motorcycle cop and became a motorcycle cop in Memphis, before transferring to Tempe, Arizona. She even played with the San Diego Women's Football League. People are capable. America is here to allow people to do that. Now, let me give you this number again, because we're getting towards the end of the program. I want to give anybody that has a question, even if it's not about the immediate topic, have a suggestion for another program, want to disagree, or just have something that they are not clear about that they would like to do. The number to call in is 646-668-8217. Please write that number down. Please put it in your phone, whatever it takes, because as we come on with different programs, I invite you to use that number for those reasons. And again, we can have an adult conversation. We cannot if we don't talk about it. I know many people are believing that black history or American history needs to be taken out of the schools. That is censorship of the worst form. We can give credit to other people. We're not the only race that has seen this. There have been times when the Italians, the Irish, the Germans, various races have been downtrodden. But when we look at the words on the Statue of Liberty, I think we left out the most important words. We hear about taking in your tired, huddled masses, et cetera. But the line above it may not have been significant at the time that it was put up. But that line basically says, you keep your best, we'll do the rest. And that dream is necessary. That dream is what makes this country great. But in order to fulfill that dream, that promise, we have to allow that to be open to all. As you look at amazing black history, you'll see accomplishments made that are beyond your wildest dreams. When we look at people like John McCoon Smith, the first licensed doctor, first licensed black doctor in America. I keep leaving the black out, and the only reason I leave the black out is because he has been left out of history because he is black. He would not be accepted in any medical school in America, but was fortunate enough to be accepted into Glasgow, as in Glasgow, Scotland. Finished it near the top of his class, earning 3 degrees. He did his internship in Paris. So he spoke at least 2 languages, if not more. He was also the first black pharmacy in this country because of the same reason. We hold people down. When we look at diseases that are coming along, we find that every day black people are making contributions. We look at Charles R. Drew, who developed a blood bank with the American Red Cross. But he left because the American Red Cross insisted that there be at least two blood banks. We've survived without it. But as we use these closed-minded concepts, we're shooting ourselves in the foot. As I age, as America ages, we're looking at things like Alzheimer's. Do you care what color the person is that comes up with a cure, a prevention of that dread disease? If you know anybody, and most people have a relative, a friend, an acquaintance, or someone that is affected, it's not just affecting that person. It also affects you. How long can we go and not open the doors of opportunity for all? And when we, in essence, spit in the face of people, and we do many other things to deny them the opportunities, we have to wonder what we're doing. We just talked about one, Katherine Johnson, who was instrumental in getting man into space. Some of you may be driving along in your automobile today and using GPS. Thank you, Dr. Gladys West, a black female mathematician that set up the groundwork for what we are using every day. It's become so popular that you can have it on your phone. I have it on my phone, and I use it almost every day. And one of the reasons that I use it is even if I know where I'm going, it'll tell me that there's a traffic jam up ahead, that I need to take off here, or I need to go there. We are revolutionizing the world. We need to have all hands on deck. And I mean that literally and figuratively. All hands on deck. We tried to describe America as a mixing bowl or melding pot or whatever we want to say, but it is not. Let's look at Duke University. The West Campus of Duke University was designed by a man named Julian Abel. A-B-L-E, Julian Abel, a black architect who had designed a home on Fifth Avenue, considered one of the grandest homes in all of Fifth Avenue, but he was black. He designed that campus 37 years before a black was ever admitted to Duke University. It came to the attention of people when they were striking because of the apartheid, and we talked about, oh, how horrible apartheid was in Africa while we're doing the same thing over here, just calling it something different, was there and made it known that it was her uncle that had designed that. That man designed that. When we see Rocky and he's running up those steps, Julian Abel designed that. And yet, we act as if the only thing black people have done, the only thing they're capable of doing, is picking cotton. No, sir. Not by a long shot. History needs to understand what we have done when we have closed off ourselves. That is laying that foundation. That doesn't take anything away from you. Like I said, many of you are laboring under the impression that I'm going to blame you for slavery. I'm not. You couldn't do something before you got here, to the best of my knowledge anyway. You could not have changed it. Were there black slave owners? Yes, but for a different reason in most cases. You know, we have April Ellison in South Carolina who did own slaves. He was a gin repair person and builder. And by gin, I mean like cotton gin, not the stuff you swill down your throat. And he was advised by his father to change his name. His father was white. And many slaves in those times were named after the month in which they were born or the day of the week that they were born. It's nothing new, because if you go to Africa and ask anybody whose name is Tuesday, for example, and it's a different word over there, many people are going to raise their hand, because the death rate is so high that most of them get the name are named after the day of their birth and not given the rest of their name until 8 days later when they're sure that they're going to survive. We have those things, and we have solutions and cures for them all. If you are an inventor, are you going to invent something that you don't want significant parts of the population to be able to use or willing to use? I don't think so. But what we have to do is we have to look internally at ourselves. When I describe, and I want you to go to AmazingBlackHistory.com, the last article or the first article, you'll come to home. But if you look at recent posts, you'll see Lieutenant General Gregg. And you can look at blog list. And there's over 300 posts that you can see there. Some of them are shameful. Yes, they are. But I can't hold you responsible for those. What I can hold you responsible for is from here forward, say something, do something. And I'm trying to give you a reason to understand why it's important. A reason to understand why it's important. We're in the same boat. And we can't make to safety unless all of us take a turn at the oars. If we know where we're going, if we know what we're going to do to get there, if we have a plan, if we follow that plan, that's where success comes. We're a great country. We could be greater. But if we don't make it a great place for all, we're going to be in decline. As we look at schools around the world, we see that we are not number one. We need to learn. We need to learn from things. And children have taught us many ways in which they can learn. But we poo-poo them because we are adults now. Song can be a great learning tool. And I hope there are teachers listening to me. We can make school fun and enriching at the same time. Being innovative is wonderful, works wonders. I had parents that did that. They made the world real to me. We can do the same thing. That's what I'm trying to do with you. Now, what I'm going to do, because I don't see very many callers on right now, is I am going to refresh my screen just to make sure I haven't overlooked anybody. And it looks like I haven't. We do not have any calls on at the present time. And that number is 646-668-8217. Again, let me give you that. That's 646-668-8217. And please understand, this is not about the superiority of anybody. It's not about somebody being better than anybody else. I'm saying we all produce winners. And what we need to do, regardless, is we need to get the best from the best that we have to offer. This is what makes the world great. This is one of the reasons that people try to get here, is because there is opportunity. Am I saying open the border? No, I'm not saying that. Not by a long shot. But we have things that we can do. We need to come together as people, understanding that we have different goals and desires and dreams. But can't we come together for the betterment of all mankind? We're making progress. Many times women fall into the same category as blacks. And let me give you an example of that. We all know about Paul Revere. Paul Revere rode, but he went west, captured. We don't know about Wentworth Cheswell. Who, you ask, is Wentworth Cheswell? He was a judge at the same time. He also happened to be black. He rode west. Where did our reinforcements come from? The west. What does this have to do with white women? Sybil Ludington, 17-year-old white girl, also rode. The heroism in this story is people went as assigned to places to do the job that had been assigned. And a due credit. How many people could be inspired to know that a 16-year-old white girl also put her life over that of her country? How many? One? Two? I dare say millions. And this is what we need to do. We have children that don't see the future because they are given a skewed view of what happened. My interest in history faded real fast because these were funny-looking people in funny-looking clothes and funny-looking hair in places that I never thought that I would ever visit. I knew I wasn't going back in time, but I didn't even think I would go to the areas, the regions where they were. I was born in South Carolina. I didn't see myself traveling much outside of that state. I went 30 miles each in different directions to visit grandparents, to visit family. For a long time, that was my world. The world is a big thing. There are opportunities. Many people are steered away from success, steered away from success because they believe that we can't do this or we can't do that. Many people may not be familiar with Malcolm Little, who was an honor roll student every day he went to school. He went to school in Omaha, Nebraska, later changed his name to Malcolm X. He wanted to be an attorney. Teacher said, no, be a carpenter. That's something that black people can do. Not knowing that we have had attorneys from years and years back. Many of you are unaware of Mumbet, I believe lived in Massachusetts. And as they were gloating over their independence and talking about the state constitution, she said, I ain't no dumb critter. And somebody listened to her, took up the mantle of the fight, and outlawed slavery in that state. We sometimes don't think that slavery has been in all of the states, but it has. It has taken place everywhere. My primary interest started in California. Why California? I never thought I'd be in California. But as I walked in Coloma, El Dorado County, California, on the American West River, at the site of Sutter's Mill, I made an interesting discovery. At the time of her death, Nancy Monroe Gooch actually owned the original site of Sutter's Mill. That family had hundreds of acres, and they were growing fruit and selling it wholesale all over the state of California. I felt so betrayed and so put down, because what history had told me is the only thing that I had done and was capable of doing was picking cotton in the South. I didn't know we'd ever been to California. I see cowboys. Never saw a black cowboy. Never. Until I find out that one out of every four was black. I watched the Lone Ranger. Oh, man, I thought he was one of the best around. Until I find out it's based on the life of Bass Reeves, B-A-S-S Reeves, the first black marshal west of the Mississippi. As I dig deeper, I find out that Bass Reeves would go get warrants and go bring people in. Most of the lawmen would come up and sort through them and get the easy pickings. Not Bass. He would come in and say, give me the next, whatever it may be. In fact, at one time, he arrested his son and brought him to justice. This was a man all about right. What's right, not who's right. His son faced trial. But that is the type of character that we have. That's the type of person that I want to be in a role like that. He was not the judge, juror, and executioner. We have, and it has troubled me for years. There is a lynching museum in Alabama. I believe it's in Montgomery, maybe one of the other cities down there. Over 4,000 people are honored in that museum that were lynched, acknowledged and lynched, because there were probably others that we don't know about. And yet and still, it hurts me, because in many times these were public events. People were stolen out of jails. They were dragged out of houses in the middle of the night. And these were public lynchings that people knew about ahead of time. Cruel, torturous, as man is dying, being hung by the neck and being shot hundreds of times, burned. Parts of the body cut off and sold as souvenirs. There was even an industry that sold postcards of mutilated bodies. Wasn't there one Christian that could say, let's give this man a trial? If we do not understand our history, we're headed to that day again at breakneck speed. We don't deserve to be there. Ladies and gentlemen, the program you're listening to is Did You Know? I'm your host, John C. Abercrombie. And at this point in time, I do not have anybody on my dashboard, so we're going to be wrapping up. Let me give you that number again in case somebody has the nerve, fortitude, inquisitiveness, or whatever it takes to come on, because I love it. I love talking with people and understanding where they are. That number again is 646-668-8217. Even if you don't call today, keep it for future reference, because it is my goal to allow you to understand those things that history has overlooked, things that are important, or else, as many of you have repeated, we are said we will repeat them again. Knowing what they are, knowing the horror that they bring, I don't want that to happen ever again. I don't think you do either. So we bring you this program. We bring you that website. Let me give that to you again. AmazingBlackHistory.com. AmazingBlackHistory is one word, .com. And there you'll find the homepage. We talk about many things that happened during the Revolutionary War. In fact, I think it was Salem Poor that killed James Abercrombie, who was a Brit. And Salem was a slave. Have to look at that with mixed emotions, but I have to look at also the story, the history behind it all. I think you'll agree with me that we today want to know the truth. I want to give it to you. If you disagree with me, write me. If you, for whatever reason, don't want to be on the air, write me. Tell me. Let's discuss it. Right now, there's about 14 minutes left in the program. I do see that we have one person that has signed on. I don't know if they have been listening, but I will open that microphone in case we have a person there. Person from area code 919, your mic is open. Do you have comments, questions, suggestions?
Hello.
Hello.
Happy Father's Day.
Thank you, sir. Is this my friend from California?
No, this is Tony from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Oh. I know that, Tony.
How you doing?
And your aunt is saying, nephew, Tony.
Yeah,
how are
hello.
You, sir?
I've been listening to, how you doing? Tell Aunt Ruth I say hello. I have
she
been
can
listening
hear you.
The whole time. Oh, hello.
Okay.
I've been listening the whole time.
Do you have comments, suggestions, questions?
Yes, very interesting. Top of the day, interesting facts and history. I learned a lot today by just listening to you, particularly the names about the different bases. Name has been changed throughout the country, like Fort Bragg, and then they educated me about the other military bases' name have been changed. And a lot of I didn't know the name and who has what base has been changed and under the names, different names I didn't know, and who were the individuals, those individuals and the history behind them. So that was very interesting to me today that I learned a lot about the different military bases. So I want to thank you for bringing that knowledge and that wisdom and let me know along with other listeners for that today. So I want to say thank you for that.
Okay. Let me make one word of mention. Tony, as I went to an HBCU, we are rivals in that respect, but he went to Elizabeth City State and is a very faithful person and always talking about Elizabeth City State, and he has something to be very proud of. I want you to know that HBCUs are not second-rate schools. Elizabeth City is coming up with an aviation program that's second to none, and there are many other things that take place. The Outer Banks of North Carolina used to be a place where slaves would send word back to the mainland of North Carolina and said, if you want to be free, come out here. This is where the 36 colored troops came from. And the 36 colored troops melded in with the Massachusetts 54. The Massachusetts 54 mm-hmm. were the ones that went down to Fort Sumter and fought and gave their lives.
Yeah.
But most people don't realize that in South Carolina, there is a mass grave to the Massachusetts 55th. Most people don't even know there was a 55th. But black people were so eager to fight for freedom that they had to form another unit. Now, we hear Massachusetts and think that everybody there was from Massachusetts. No, there were people from the Carolinas. They may be related to you. You may know some of the people or relatives or descendants of those people. We're not just sitting around picking cotton. We have fought every day for whatever freedom that we could get. And I think Tony can tell you about this. His aunt, my wife, has even been able to operate the controls on the Wright Brothers plane there at Kitty Hawk. And knowing that Paul Laurence Dunbar, who many of the blacks are familiar with, is a poet, and the Wright Brothers had a very, very close relationship. They spent time in each other's homes. In fact, they competed against each other. Paul Laurence Dunbar published a newspaper. The Wright Brothers published a newspaper. Paul Laurence Dunbar succeeded. They didn't. But we have history all around us. We can't sit around and say, I don't know anybody, because you find that you may be related, very closely related to somebody from history. Where Tony is, he grew up near Edington, North Carolina, and Edington is the home of Harriet Jacobs, a woman who hid and hid for 7 years to avoid being raped by her owner, and wrote a book about it in North Carolina. The state of North Carolina has authenticated that, yes, she did write that book. So history is all around us. And we have other people. And I believe, but I have not been able to find out information, that there was a terminus to the underground marine, because many people left on ships out of Edington. But anyway, Tony, more comments or questions or suggestions?
No, just glad to be a part of it. It's been a while since I've been on. I look forward to it on Sunday, if, you know, my schedule out. I just appreciate the information. I appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule, and just continue to share the knowledge and increase my knowledge and those who are listening. So I don't only just speak for myself, but I'm sure I speak for others. But just glad, continue to be a part of it and keep sharing it with us, and I will continue to listen and support it. Just want to say thank you very much for that.
Now, there is an archive so that you can go back and look at previous broadcasts. Now, next week we're going to talk about Charity Adams. And she ran the 6888, an all-black, all-female unit that served in England and in France. And there was approximately 900 women in that unit. Today we are down to 5. But it was 75 years before America even acknowledged recognition of these people. These women worked in a male facility, and they had to wear their outdoor clothes because it was unheated, rat-infested building. But they did what even the most optimistic people thought was a 6-month job in 3 months. And we need to recognize those people. I have a post on the 6888. You can look them up. And I've spoken with one of the guys that was instrumental in getting a statue of them up. There are so many people, places, and events that have escaped history that should be a part of it. So I will ask you, Tony, to encourage your Vikings to listen as I encourage my Blue Bears to to listen as well. It's a good rivalry.
Yes. Yeah, it is. It is. I love it.
HBCUs,
it's nothing like that
credited.
HBCU rivalry.
Yeah, HBCUs are accredited. They're not second-rate schools. The problem that we have now is that if every black applied to them, there's not enough space. And I'm not criticizing people that don't go to them, but I'm saying don't. Overlook them. Don't. Because they have produced,
I totally agree with you.
They have produced outstanding graduates, and I hope to someday do a series on some of the graduates of HBCUs. So I appreciate it, Mr. Tony. Give my regards to all people up in that part of the world. And
okay,
I hope that you're able to join us again next week and bring some of your Viking buddies with you.
Okay, I send the way, and thank you.
Thank you.
I love you guys.
All right, we love you too and love all of our listeners. The program that you're listening to is Did You Know? I'm your host, John C. Abercrombie. We welcome comments. We welcome suggestions. We welcome just people that disagree with us, because that's how we all learn and how we bridge this divide. I hope to see you again next week at 4 o'clock Eastern, 1 o'clock Pacific, and have a blessed week. Be enlightened, be informed, be powerful. Thank you.